You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your host, Josh Furlong.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, and it's been a minute. It's been quite a while, actually. Football season ended, and I thought we were going to do a lot more of these podcasts, and my co-host, you know, one named Josh Newman, decided he wanted to go be big time and go be a beat writer in Texas or something like that, so no fault of his. You know, I was only giving him pennies here, so I'm glad that, no, I'm just kidding. He got a great opportunity in Texas, a full-time gig. After he left the Salt Lake Tribune, obviously, he was working for me and in a freelancer capacity, so I'm happy for him that he was able to get a full-time gig down in Texas and will still stay close to the college football beat. But now you're just stuck with me. You know, I'm going to try to get different guests or have different things on from time to time, so it's not just you listening to me, because I get bored of myself, so why would you want to listen to me? I get it. So, but before we get into that, before we get into the podcast, we'll say, I want to tell you a little bit about our partner, Black Desert, who is helping with the KSL.com Beyond the Game video series. The video series highlights various athletes and gives an inside look into their life. Recently, we talked with former Utah great Eric Weddle about his life after the NFL coaching at high school team in San Diego. You can check out that video and many others on KSL.com. Black Desert is a new resort destination in St. George that features a championship Tom Weisskopf 19-hole golf course that combines a private club feel with destination resort golf amid lava fields and 360-degree vistas. Black Desert is changing entertainment in southern Utah, and they're just beginning. Black Desert, where remarkable is within reach, home of the Black Desert Championship PGA Tour. All right, now that that's out of the way, let's actually jump into a podcast. So part of the reason why I haven't done a podcast for the last little bit is simply this Utah beat has been extremely exhausting with how much things have been going on. I have men's basketball, women's basketball, gymnastics, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Now football is back. So we're going to do a little bit of this and try to do a little bit more of a regular schedule. We'll try to get something in and give you guys something that you can listen to. Hopefully it'll be of worth, and it's not just me rambling for however long I decide to keep this podcast going. So we'll have some fun with this. Hopefully we can get some good people in here and chat. And I'm always open to feedback, and if you have anything, don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. So let's start with the Utah women's basketball team. Recently, on Monday, they fell to Gonzaga 77-66 in the second round of the NCAA tournament. They were the last Utah team standing in the, you know, and it was a good run for them. Obviously, injuries derailed their season a little bit, but they had a roster that was more than capable of being able to make a run in the NCAA tournament. But unfortunately, they ran into a Gonzaga team that was incredibly difficult. I mean, this is a team that came into the game with 35 game win streak at the Kennel. They just don't lose there. This is a team that shoots really well from 3-point range. They average, I think it was just over 9 3-pointers a game. But if you watch that game, there was nothing stopping Gonzaga. You know, Utah went on their runs. They built up a lead. They had a 7-point lead, and then Gonzaga decided to kind of turn on the switch and started hitting 3-pointers and hitting 3-pointers and hitting 3-pointers. There was one stretch where they made 9 consecutive 3-point attempts. So there was nothing that Utah could do. I mean, and some of these shots, honestly, you know, some of it was, you know, slacking on defense a little bit. I don't want to say it was a terrible effort, but it wasn't great at times. But there was times where the defenders right up in their face, they had a hand in their face and everything, and they're just throwing up prayers. I mean, these are, you know, educated, you know, really well, you know, practiced 3-point attempts, but they still got them with ease. And so it really just kind of put Utah behind. They go down in halftime about a 10-point deficit, and second half started, and they, you know, Gonzaga went on a 10-0 run, and it really just kind of doomed Utah. They weren't able to overcome it. They got the lead down to 6, you know, late in the game, and looked like maybe this was going to be a little bit more of a fight, but Gonzaga turned it on again and did well. But This is a team that was really talented. Gonzaga has a lot of great shooters. Former Ute Brenda Maxwell was included in there. She didn't have like this you know scorched night for them, but it was a total team effort. I think they had four players scoring double digits, and you know being on that court, I mean I've been to a lot of NCAA tournaments, and they're fun. Regardless of what team is on the court. The energy is electric, and I kind of get this adrenaline rush from sitting there on the court. And where I was sitting, it was just right there at the 3-point line, and so you had players parked right by me all the time. And you know, I was a little nervous the ball was going to come hit me in the head as I wasn't looking or something. But they did a great job. It was fun to be able to be on the sidelines there and to kind of just see that firsthand. You know, Gonzaga is a good team. Utah's a good team. They just couldn't find their shots as well as Gonzaga. It ends a run of Alyssa Pealey at Utah, right? Alyssa Pealey finishes the game with 35 points on 12 of 20 shooting. She also had 7 rebounds. I mean, she was the key focus for this team. She did everything for them. She gave them what they needed to live, and Utah just didn't have enough of other people that were able to contribute. Not for the lack of trying. There was a lot of clean, good looks that looked on target. They just hit the back of the rim or the front of the rim or something that way, and it kind of ends. So it's a tough ending to the season. I tweeted after the game, you know, what could have been if Gianna Neepkins and Issy Palmer were on the team on this roster and kind of what that could have looked like. It could have been a fun run. I mean, I think just adding Gianna Neepkins alone would have really changed the dynamic of this team with another scorer, somebody that actually creates their own shots. A lot of Utah players, outside of Alyssa Pealey, after Gianna went down, they had to kind of learn to create their own shots. They were getting the best defender on them. They were learning how to kind of not be the spot up shooter, catch and shoot through shooter from 3-point range, where Alyssa was going to take the post and Gianna was going to be able to take the rest of that heat. It was a team that kind of had to makeshift that, and it didn't go as well as all of them were hoping, but I still think there's a lot of promise with this team. Obviously, you lose Alyssa for the next season, and you lose Deja Young, Issy Palmer as well. But this is a team that can make a run. Obviously, they're going to be in the Big 12, so a different look. But there's a lot of good things to come. You know, Lynn Roberts talked about this now being a NCAA tournament expectation, right? She's put the expectations on the team that it's not a matter of just being good at basketball anymore and trying to win as many games as possible. That's obviously part of the strategy, but the expectation is to deliver in the NCAA tournament, right? And so she wants that heat. She wants to be able to say that's the expectations. And so we'll see how it goes. And there's going to be a lot to digest from that season, but hard to be upset with that. They make it to the second round, third consecutive year that Utah is in the NCAA tournament. And I think things are still on the up and up for them, so it's a good thing to celebrate for them. And I know a lot of fans came out this year, and celebrated this team. They were fun to watch, and I think that's not going to change. So, as part of this though, the NCAA tournament experience wasn't exactly the most ideal for Utah. By now you've probably seen it. It's kind of gone all over the nation and. It's really unfortunate. So what happened was during the NCAA tournament, I got a tip that Utah had to change hotels because of some incidences of racism up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, where they were stationed. The hotel was roughly 35, 45 minutes away. They had a police escort like most teams do. This is common. So it's not like just because they were going to Coeur d'Alene, they had a police escort. But they're staying in another state. You know, they're almost 45 minutes away from the arena where they are supposed to be, and there's a lot of nuances there. The city of Spokane had a lot going on at that time. You had the men's tournament. They had a location there as well, so you had games going on for that. There's a big volleyball tournament for kind of youth age groups that they always have that week. And so the hotel spaces were limited. It's not like they didn't have any. What had happened is, just for planning purposes, because women's host the location, Gonzaga didn't know if they were going to be a host at the time. And so it was tough to reserve. I think it was something like 50 rooms for Utah or any teams really, to be able to be there. And so they decided to got a waiver from the NCAA to be able to get them up in Coeur d'Alene where they could kind of guarantee that a little bit. that's how they got there. UC Irvine was up in Coeur d'Alene as well, and I believe another team, I'm blanking on the name, they were in the kind of the general vicinity as well. So it wasn't just Utah up in this area. But what had happened is, well, Utah was in Coeur d'Alene. That night, their first night, they decided to go to a team dinner, which included the band members. It included, you know, members of the cheerleading team, just kind of everybody and the staff there to celebrate the season. Just kind of have fun, do one last hurrah before, you know, they move on. Maybe Utah's season continues or it doesn't. And well, going to or, you know, walking toward the restaurant, there was a truck that drove past. The individual or individuals, I'm not exactly sure. They were trying to intimidate the team. They were revving the trucks and trying to make their presence known, and then yelled the N-word out towards the team. You know, obviously there are several members of the team that are black. Other you know, nationalities and other things that where you know I know that word necessarily doesn't strike for other nationalities or everything, but this is a word that is obviously very charged and something that is very hateful. It's not something that they want. Nobody wants to hear that, right? And so it was really shocking to the team, as one can imagine. And they kind of were stunned a little bit and still went to the restaurant. And reports from Idaho say that the restaurant owner said that they were a little jarred from something. They didn't know what had happened. And it was, you know, obviously something was up. The restaurant staff thought maybe it was them, that something happened in their restaurant and they weren't up to, you know, they weren't happy about it because there was a lot of talking and a lot of conversations being had, and that little did they know of what actually took place. And so after the meal, which was about 2 hours that they were there, they were leaving kind of in different groups because there was a lot of them and they were just kind of leaving in different groups. And this time more trucks appeared and they were revving the engines and trying to really showcase an intimidation factor based on the conversations that I had. And once again, you know, the N-word was used multiple times and directed towards these players. And it really left everybody there scared. I think they feared for their safety. Obviously, they didn't want to be in an area that was going to have people that hated them, or maybe even they didn't hate them, or they're just trying to, you know, rile them up or something. Whatever the reason, I mean, I don't know why people do this. It's unfortunate this is even exists in this world today. But they wanted to intimidate them, right? And I think that really left a lot of people scared. I talked to Charmel Green, the deputy athletic director, who is also black and part of that team. She, you know, she was emotional, as you can imagine, and she said she was left numb. She's heard it every single night in her head when she goes to sleep. She can't get it out. One of the things that she said that hurt her the most is watching other members of the team and you know the band and the cheerleading team see the reaction to her, because I mean they saw it happen real hand and seeing racism happen real in firsthand. And it was a real stunning in a very negative way situation where they just didn't feel safe, and so they all, you know, got back to their hotel and kind of worked together in groups to ensure the safety of these individuals in trucks that clearly wanted to make their presence known and intimidate the team. So, you know, after this was all said and done, the university worked with Gonzaga and the NCAA to move the hotels. Obviously, they didn't want to be there. UC Irvine heard about the incident. They didn't have any issues themselves, but they heard about the incident and they wanted to get out of Coeur d'Alene as well. But the most disappointing thing here, I mean, there's a lot of disappointing things here. Obviously, that racism exists, that these things happen. It's something that obviously leaves a black mark on kind of the NCAA tournament experience for these guys. And Lynn Roberts spoke to that, you know, eloquently and pointed it out and showcased it. So it's an unfortunate thing for this team. You know, Lynn Roberts said it was a distraction, as you can imagine. But it's just an unfortunate situation for a team that, you know, you go to an area which has known racial tensions. I mean, it's gotten better over the years, at least that's from the reports. But it's still an area known for it, right? I mean, this is an area where Aryan Nation was present heavily. The city and the state has been trying to rid the area of that a lot and trying to make it, make them have less racial tensions, and it just doesn't go away. And I think what was most stunning to a lot of these players was, I don't want to say you live in a bubble, because I mean, it's hard to say that people live in a bubble and don't see this, but I mean, my Twitter feed for the last day and a half since I reported on this story has just been insane with the amount of people kind of commenting on it and saying it's fake or saying they shouldn't be in an area where they shouldn't be. It's insane. But I mean, in a university setting, there is a lot of diversity, right? There's a lot of people that are up there from different parts of the country or the world, and they all kind of work together. Everything kind of works in a university setting. And so then to be in an area where it just didn't work, I mean, it's tough, and Utah's really upset that they even got put in that location, not just because of the driving distance and everything there, but you're in an area that had known racial tensions. You were given police that were from Washington that aren't even in that jurisdiction. And let's be real. I mean, like, if something were to happen, police are going to step up. It doesn't matter what jurisdiction is going to be there. But at the same time, it's still not their jurisdiction to kind of handle some of these things. And so it was just they're there for a police escort. They're not there for necessarily the safety and protection. And obviously they would be, but it's just different, right? And so it was a tough situation for them. And, I don't want to belabor this too much. I hope that this team can move past this, but it showcases the reality that racism still exists, right? And this is a thing that people are going to deal with for a long time. My conversations with people after that were really tough, right? Like, these are conversations that as a white man, I don't understand, right? Like, I just simply don't. I've had many conversations with black individuals who've explained it to me, and just a simple fear that can kind of permeate in different settings where you just don't feel comfortable. And so I don't want to pretend like I know, and I don't want to cheapen those experiences, but I hope that for their sake that they can get what they need to, the peace that they can get, but more or less that we can call out racism when it is, right? And just understand that some people think it's just a word. And sure, it is a word, but it has very charged meaning. It has a lot of intimidation factors behind it. It's not something that you throw around lightly. You shouldn't ever use it, honestly. But it's something that means real pain to people. It's a tough situation, and the university is healing right now, and it's not going to be easy. This is a tough thing, and like I mentioned, Charmel Green told me she hears it every single night when she goes to bed, and that's the unfortunate part, right? Like, these are things that people are going to have to live with for a long time. It's not just something, people being funny or teenagers being funny or, other people being funny. This means something to people. So, unfortunate situation in the NCAA tournament, but hopefully they can kind of move past this, and maybe there can be some more recognition in trying to help rid this in our country. I know it's never going to go away, but hopefully we can get to a point where this isn't an issue anymore. So I hate to just be kind of move forward, but that's kind of what we're going to do. So you do have the men's basketball team that is playing tonight. If you're listening to this after today, obviously you've seen what happened with the game, but they will play tonight in the NIT. They will be playing VCU at the Huntsman Center for a chance to play in the semifinals. This will go to Hinkle Fieldhouse if they make it to the NIT semifinals. But this is an opportunity for fans to be able to see Brandon Carlson for the last time at the Huntsman Center. He put out a tweet, trying to get as many people as he can get to get there. This is a fun environment, right? Like, it's not the NCAA tournament, so I get it. But this is a great opportunity to be able to see the team compete. They obviously want to be able to win. And so I've always said in the NIT, if you can get past that first game, there's a higher likelihood, I'll say, that the teams that are compiled or are composed together and stay together, they have an opportunity to go on a deep run, because they now kind of they've gotten the NCAA tournament disappointment out of their way. They're now in a situation where they say, okay, now we want to win this tournament. So yeah, it's not the big dance that everybody calls it or anything that way, but this is still an opportunity to see Utah do well. This is the first tournament that Utah's been in the last 5-6 seasons. So it has its meaning, and Utah hopes that this is obviously something that can kind of jumpstart them into next year. Obviously injuries once again derailed this team as well. So it's been a tough go, but Utah's making the best of it. So check them out tonight. It's an interesting Utah State angle with two former coaches, Craig Smith, and then the guy that followed him, and Ryan Odom, who is now the coach at VCU. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how that goes. And there is a close connection between those two coaches. So it'll be fun to kind of see how that goes. But moving into Utah football, we're just going to go quick on this. I don't want to spend too much time because it is spring football, and so there's not really a lot to glean from it other than you're kind of trying to establish a lot of kind of what you want to move forward to into the summer season as well as into fall. And obviously that first bullet point is always going to be the quarterback. I don't know of a season yet that ever quarterback is not kind of the focus, and there's good reason for that. For this year, obviously you want Cam Rising, and it is a noticeable difference to have Cam Rising out there. He means the world to this team. Obviously, him on the field, there's just a change. There's like a sense of confidence and just his overall ability. I mean, just watching him perform out there and the limited media availability that we get to watch. It's a noticeable difference, right? Like Cam is the guy. So right now it's more just kind of getting him tuned up, getting him acclimated to it. Obviously they're not going to put him in situations where he's going to get tackled or risk another lost season. So he's the guy, and by all accounts, everything is going well with him. But behind that, you've got the backup quarterback battle with Brandon Rose and Isaac Wilson, and this is a legit competition, right? You've got a guy that's been in the system in Brandon Rose for the last 3 years. Still hasn't kind of managed the playbook as well as he should. And I say should in the sense that, like, he's been there for 3 years. He also got injured, and so that kind of limited his ability as well. So don't take that as a knock by any means. But this is a guy that has a little bit more experience in the system, doesn't have any D1 experience in the sense that he's played, but he's been on a D1 team for 3 years. Going up against, obviously, the favored quarterback that everybody expects to kind of slowly kind of get into that role in Isaac Wilson. And anybody that watched what he did at Corner Canyon knows the talent that he has and the ability. So, but this is a legit competition between these two. And by all accounts, Isaac is pushing him, right? Pushing Brandon Rose. And his biggest issue is probably going to be learning the speed of college. And Morgan Scali isn't going to take it easy on him. He's got to get his guys ready, and he's got to be able to, show Isaac what it's going to be. You can't kind of dance around that and say, okay, like we'll slowly acclimate it to it. There's limited practices, and they have to get going. So, Isaac hasn't made perfect reads at times. Obviously, those windows close faster, but that's all part of the learning process as a freshman. You want him to be able to make those and at least have the fortitude, we'll say, to be able to make those throws into tight windows, and he's making progress, right? So I think you'll see him continue to fight. I'm curious to see what he looks like at the spring game. I know that Utah is really high on him, and they believe that he can kind of be the number two guy, and it's more just a mastery of the playbook and all Andy Ludwig wants and everything that way. And obviously just kind of shaking off the speed of high school versus D1 and really getting those reps. So it'll be interesting to see his progress and what Utah's able to do. Beyond that, Utah's got some questions. They need to find some depth, and so I wouldn't be surprised if they go to the transfer portal and try to bring in a veteran guy to maybe give some experience in case something happens to Cam and they're not just left with kind of a similar situation to last year and not a lot of proven D1 experience. That's tough. It's tough to bring in a quarterback when you've got a veteran in there. And but, it's something that Utah's going to try to do. And if not, they're going to try really hard to make Brandon or Isaac the guy and see what they can do. So I think there's a lot of fun there, and I'm excited to kind of see how that tunes out. So beyond that, there's a lot of positions that are developing. There's a lot of depth, a lot of returners. Wide receiver is obviously going to be an area of focus for Utah this year, and bringing Dorian Singer and Tayshawn Prince, freshman David Washington in there. You've got other guys like Micah Pittman, who obviously was injured last year, and so we haven't seen much of him, along with the proven guys that that are going to do some stuff. So that'll be an area where I'm curious to see how that is managed, how Utah is able to take some strides. But by all accounts, Dorian Singer is the guy. He's made a good impression, and the coaching staff is really excited about him. You know, in the backfield with running backs, obviously there's a lot of proven guys out there, but if you've gotten a chance to ever speak with Quinton Ganther, he's never satisfied and he's never willing to, you know, put that crown on somebody's head. So he wants them to earn it, and he wants them to be able to really kind of take over, right? You've got Mekhi Bernard, you've got Jalen Glover, you've got some other guys back there that have some really good things. Mike Mitchell's getting a lot of praise. He's the redshirt freshman that he's got the body for it. It's a matter of if he can kind of stay within the system and understand it and do exactly what he needs. And in the limited time that we've gotten to see him, I mean, he's got all the intangibles. It's just a matter of making sure that it fits. So Quinton Ganther's not going to just, you know, let anybody take the reins there. It's a fight, right? And he's going to demand respect, and he's going to demand that they do it the right way. So a lot of good things there. Beyond that, you know, on the defense, you know, the defensive line is going to be set. They're fine. They've got some good guys. They've got a lot of depth. So I don't want to spend a lot of time there. The main question is really going to come to the secondary. And it's not that Utah doesn't have guys ready. You got a Zamaya Vaughn, for example, who's really taking his game to the next level and is really doing a lot of good things. He's going to be as an established guy. Teo Johnson at safety. You know, you got a lot of these guys that have been in the system, and they're going to be fine. It's more developing the depth, and that's where Utah's kind of focusing on. Who, you know, with the guys that they have, do they have the ability to be able to kind of get them to that next level by fall where they feel like they can rotate? You know, as it is with wide receiver, you're rotating a lot of guys in there. You're not just keeping guys out there forever as the quote-unquote one or two guy. You're rotating, you're picking matchups, you're doing different things that way. And so you need a lot of guys to be able to fill that need. So Utah, you know, they feel confident with what they have, but they recognize that it's not enough. And so you're going to see some emphasis in the transfer portal after the spring season. You're going to see them trying to bring in more veteran players, just trying to get people that can kind of be the warm bodies to fill the depth there. So I'm curious to see how that goes. It's a room where, you know, I don't think that Utah has to worry too much. It's more just comes to that depth. And as we saw last year, depth absolutely matters when injuries pile up, and injuries are going to pile up, right? You know, I think Utah, and for my sake of sanity, I hope that they don't have that many injuries for another season, but you never know what's going to happen, and so you need to build up that depth. So a lot of good things happening up at Utah right now. They're getting closer to the end. There's, I believe, 7 practices left in spring. Obviously, they want to make those all matter, make them all count, make sure that they can get everything out of them that they can. But I think, you know, everybody's pleased. I think it's funny because Kyle Whittingham in spring is usually much more reserved and relaxed. And I sense a little bit more game-like season attitude out of him right now. He wants to win. He wants to make a good impression in the Big 12. Obviously, if you've seen any of the preseason projections, Utah is going to be favored, if not 1 or 2. And so I think he wants to make a good impression, right? He wants to go to a new conference. He wants to set the tone. He wants to show that this Utah team is legit, that they weren't just from a weak conference, as everybody likes to call it, that they can actually go into another conference and kind of take over. So it'll be interesting. I think this is a team that is really focused on the prize. You've got guys that they 100% want to be in a playoff game, right? They want to be able to be in that experience and be able to be a part of the 12-team playoff and do whatever they can to compete at that high level. And I think this team has all the right pieces. Obviously, they need some more depth in certain areas, as I've mentioned, but this is a team that is more than capable of doing it. So it'll be interesting to see, and you know, I hope to give a little bit more in depth of a look as we move forward. I wanted to just kind of jump on and kind of touch on a few things that have been going on. We'll break down some other stuff and get it going as we re-up this podcast, I guess. So thanks for tuning in. I appreciate everybody that listens to this. This has always been a great opportunity for me It was for us when Josh was here, but it's a fun opportunity. I appreciate people that listen to this. Please, you know, give feedback. Let me know what you want. Let me know kind of the things that you want to hear. I'm always happy to kind of look into that and kind of give you insight on what I see. Some of the things I see, I kind of take advantage of it and say, oh yeah, everybody knows that. But I kind of have to let myself know that no, unless I tell them, nobody knows. So I appreciate that. And we'll hit this back probably next week and kind of see how that goes. But thanks for listening, and we'll chat with you guys later.